Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. The Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia is celebrating its 50th anniversary with a special concert tomorrow at 2:30 at Verizon Hall. Its growth over the years is impressive, and the roster of notable conductors has added to its reputation. With each music director, their stature has grown, and we look back and ahead with pride and expectation. Our first guest today is Susan Schwartz McDonald, president of the board of the Chamber Orchestra. Welcome, Susan.
My pleasure to be here, Jill.
And you are, tell us your role with the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia.
I'm president of the board, and that means that I have as my colleagues and supporters a terrific group of stewards of the organization whose passion and responsibility is to help keep us play the music.
Well, it's the 50th anniversary, isn't it, I believe? And I read somewhere that this was that the Chamber Orchestra was established to give the students at Curtis an opportunity to work in an orchestra and learn the ropes. So it's not really connected with Curtis, though.
No, it's not. But, you know, Philadelphia, as you, of all people, know so well, has a real abundance of musical talent here. It's just an exceptional city in that way. And the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia, which was begun as concerto soloists by Mark Mastrovoy, was a terrific opportunity and vehicle to showcase and further educate those very talented musicians.
The musicians and also the public, I think, as well. Because you think of the Philadelphia Orchestra and that's it. And there are other organizations that have very fine musicians who may be even part of the Philadelphia Orchestra but freelance and do other things. So concerto soloists was, I remember when I came to Philadelphia, one of the respected ensembles above and beyond the Philadelphia Orchestra. So what we're talking about now is the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. So did this evolve into the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia?
It did. One of the ways that an organization survives to its 50th anniversary is to be adaptable and fluid in many ways, even within a basic framework. And a few years before I joined the board, the name was changed from Concerto Soloists to the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia to really reflect the way we had evolved and the product that we were producing musically, which is an ensemble and was really truly a chamber orchestra. The words concerto soloists don't quite do justice.
Well, chamber, of course, it's a smaller orchestra. But are there members of the Philadelphia Orchestra in the chamber orchestra?
No, but we do have a number of performers who also perform with the opera and the ballet and do other freelance work. We share those resources. But they're a critical part of our ensemble.
Yes, I know, because there are no orchestras these days, and where the ones that are in existence are fast disappearing. So I think that the chamber orchestra is a very important ensemble.
That's absolutely right. We see our mission as really to deliver a distinctive, really unique musical product to this region and ultimately to a much broader audience outside the area. But one of the things we're very happy to do and we think is hugely important to do is to keep musicians playing. We have very talented musicians, an extraordinary ensemble, really. And they deserve to be heard and to be employed. And so we see that as hugely important service to the city and to the musical community and the professional musicians especially.
You have auditions, of course.
Yes, we do. We do.
Because to use the same musicians who are in the Philadelphia Orchestra, that would be, I don't know how I can say it, you know, nicely, but I mean, it would be unfair. I think there are openings, of course, for other people to get work here in Philadelphia.
Well, it's impractical for us, really. I mean, the Philadelphia Orchestra, as you know, has a very, very full performance schedule through the year. And so it wouldn't really be feasible for them to do much else. We live in harmony with other organizations that that employ many of our musicians. But of course, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia is their opportunity to be truly center stage.
Yeah, and also a steady job.
Well,
in cases, you know, where that at least was something. And there aren't many of those around either. I mean, throughout the country, you know, we are having a disaster in terms of the orchestras folding.
The ecosystem has changed, and I think I used the word adaptability earlier. I think orchestras and ensembles of all types and arts organizations of all types are really having to rethink their model and to really be strategic and very flexible in the way they think about not only their mission, but the way they execute it and, of course, how they secure funding.
Well, I think you're an expert in that area. You're in you're a market consultant, aren't you? I mean, that's what your job is.
That's my day job.
Yeah, it's your day job, that's this is your fun job, you know.
Right.
But essentially, I mean, bottom line is money.
Absolutely. You know, the arts organizations in general, it's a tough business model. You know, it's fair to say that when you perform a classical music concert, you lose money when you perform. So somehow that money has to be subsidized. That loss has to be subsidized. And the chair of the board, Ken Jaron, is fond of saying that without a TV contract, the Phillies wouldn't operate at a profit either. So arts organizations are not exceptional in that regard. But it's more difficult, more challenging for us. And we have had to be creative. We're constantly rethinking how we adapt to an environment that, since the recession, you know, has come back in a way that is, I don't know that it'll ever be the same. I hate to use Stephen King as my cultural metaphor, but I like to think of it as a sort of pet cemetery idea where nothing comes back. The economy hasn't come back in the same way.
I think Mozart was always waiting to get paid also. I mean, I don't think anything has changed since then. But at least there are unions now. But really, I mean, the music business is not, and it's up there, you know, with the arts, you know, with drama and theater, and
Absolutely. And
you can't live without it. P.S. I mean, and the world can't live without it. So 50th anniversary, this is a celebration concert that you're going to be having. 50 years, that's a lot.
It is a long time, and it's been an interesting evolution. I'm not the best historian of the organization because I've only been there for around 10 years.
Well,
but the evolution has been a fascinating one. And again, it's a reminder that an organization to survive needs to adapt, and we continue to evolve, and we will. But the one thing I will say is that I do believe for this organization that the best is yet to come. We have established ourselves as a creative force to be reckoned with in this community. We want to expand our footprint, and I think we're well on our way to what I think is the next really critical half century. I see us as a truly durable part of the Philadelphia art community.
That's wonderful.
And so I am really thrilled to be able to crow about who we are, what we've accomplished, and where we're going here.
And we'll continue to accomplish. And it's the 50th anniversary, and we celebrate with you. And thank you so much for coming to WRTI and sharing the story with us.
Thank you. I hope you'll be at the concert and raise a glass of champagne with us.
I certainly will. Thank you. music of Dag Viren, we heard the last movement of his string serenade performed by concerto soloists, Mark Mostovoy conducting. That's a vintage recording, actually. Mark Mostovoy was the conductor of the concerto solos. He's our guest today here on WRTI. We certainly couldn't talk about the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia without interviewing you, Mark. I can only say that when I first came here 20-some-odd years ago, I was a harpist, and I had been doing a lot of playing, and I came to Philadelphia, but I was working on the radio, and I wanted to play, so I didn't know who to contact. And I was told, contact Mark Mostovoy. And I said, well, what does he, you know, do, and so on and so forth. And in those days, you had an ensemble called Concerto Soloists, and that's how I met you. Is that still in existence?
Well, the orchestra is still in existence. Now it's called the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. And of course, then we were known as Concerto Soloist Chamber Orchestra.
Now, for the audience, what is the difference between an orchestra and a chamber orchestra?
Well, that's an interesting question. I guess you could say it's more has to do with more with numbers.
The size.
Yeah, the size of the ensemble and also a certain degree repertoire.
But is a chamber orchestra only strings?
A chamber orchestra can be strings and winds and brass and timpani and percussion.
It
can involve many, many instruments, but not as many as a full symphony orchestra. There are fewer players.
What happened with you was when I came, as I say, everyone mentioned Mark Mostovoy, and you had the concerto soloists at that time. So what kind of music did you play at that point?
When we began, we played mainly Baroque and early classical music, and mainly concertos, because we featured members of the ensemble as soloists.
Okay.
That's why the group came about. My interest was in featuring members of the ensemble as soloists. This is how we enticed the musicians to originally come to the orchestra.
So they'd have an opportunity to be a soloist with a group.
Everyone in the orchestra was given an opportunity to perform as a soloist.
Everyone?
Yes, everyone during the course of the season. Everyone.
That is really unique. It could be several viola players playing separately as soloists. I mean, in other words, every person in the section would have an opportunity to play a concerto with the group. Is that right?
Yes. Every member of the ensemble had the opportunity to perform during the course of the season. We had 8 violins when we began, 3 violas, 2 cellos, a bass, and a harpsichord. And during the course of the season, everyone had the opportunity to perform as a soloist, and more than once, in fact.
That's marvelous. That's a wonderful thing that you created, because there is no place to do that. I mean, so for people that really are fine musicians and they're part of an ensemble, this was an opportunity for them to shine as a soloist with that ensemble. That's a wonderful idea, Mark.
Thank you.
Yes, wonderful. So has the concerto soloist stayed as an entity, or did it kind of warp into a chamber orchestra?
Well, see, the whole concept changed during the course of the years, because originally we were an orchestra that featured the members of the ensemble, and then gradually we brought in guest soloists. And we had 2 series where we had one series featuring guest soloists and the other series featuring members of the orchestra. But it evolved over the years.
It's very interesting, because you gave the opportunity initially for instrumentalists to be soloists with an ensemble, and then it grew and grew and grew, and it had no place to go except to become a much larger orchestra, which is now, I guess, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. That is a larger ensemble, is that right?
Well, my understanding is that the ensemble is different sizes for different concerts. Again, I haven't been there for a number of years, Jill, and the concept changed, and when we performed early on, we performed basically with 16 musicians. And gradually we brought winds in and increased the size. So we played concerts from as few as 12 to as many as 33. It depended upon the program. It depended upon the repertoire. But things evolved over the years, and that's
why. And it was a wonderful opportunity for musicians to have a chance to be a soloist with an ensemble as well. And I thank you, Mark. It's a joy to see you once again after so many, many years. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jill.
Music of Ludwig von Beethoven, his amazing Ninth Symphony. We just heard the first movement performed by the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia, conducted by Ignaz Solzhenitsyn. We are delighted today to have as our guest Maestro Ignaz Solzhenitsyn. And we are so thrilled that you found the time to speak with us today, Maestro.
My pleasure.
Tell us, well, I know you essentially as a great pianist. I know you are a very, very wonderful musician. Did you have a kind of a desire to conduct a chamber orchestra? How did you come to Philadelphia? Did you come with this in mind? Were you requested? A little bit of your background as well.
Well, you know, it really was coincidental. I had come to Philadelphia to study at Curtis after my studies in London and in New York. And then at Curtis, I as I mentioned, I was accepted both on piano and conducting. And then Mark Mostovoy, who was then the music director of the Chamber Orchestra, heard me conduct at Curtis and asked me to conduct the Chamber Orchestra. And it all went very well. And then so then I was asked to be his assistant. And then eventually I became associate conductor and eventually principal conductor and finally music director. So, and, you know, now after many fruitful years, conductor laureate, and so the relationship continues, and I'm always happy to come back.
Well, we're delighted to have you, we must say. We feel very honored. And I often wonder, I know that many conductors play the piano through the years, the great conductors. And is that the way you started? I mean, were you part of the orchestra? Were you interested in a solo career as a pianist? What led you to conducting altogether?
I loved the orchestral and operatic repertoire from an early age, and began to think in my mid-teenage years that I would want to do this. I would want to conduct, not only to perform as a pianist, but also to conduct. And so by the time I came to Curtis, the Curtis Institute, I had that thought well formed, and so I was able to audition for the conducting program as well as the piano program, and was fortunate enough to be accepted, and then I guess the rest is history,
and the history of course, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia, which is something that evolved from a very, very small ensemble into something which is really quite notable now. And in terms of size, the Chamber Orchestra, can you say, has it increased at all through the years in terms of concept?
Well, there is never going to be, of course, an exact number, and if you think of it, what is the size of a symphony orchestra is very much open to question. I get that question all the time. What is the size? So how many musicians are there really in an orchestra? Well, that depends on which orchestra. And more importantly, that depends on which repertoire, because the size of musicians for a Mahler symphony, even not the eighth, but any other Mahler symphony, is going to be far bigger than the numbers for a Schumann symphony, or even a Brahms symphony written just a few years before Mahler, perhaps. So, and the same thing with chamber orchestra. But I would say that during my tenure as music director, we increased the number of musicians that were on stage on a week after week basis, week in and week out. The standard number, the kind of a default number that we had, was 33.
Well, I'm a harpist, so I know all about not being there.
There you go.
So,
yes, exactly.
So, I mean, there's always that. So it's a, well, I, as I say, said earlier, for people, a chamber orchestra, I think we define it, comparing it to a major symphony orchestra, but also the repertoire is perhaps Baroque and even later. Through the years, people kind of identified a chamber orchestra as a smaller ensemble that was limited with repertoire. And somehow now that whole concept is changing. Tell us, do you have any ideas in terms of repertoire that you kind of conform to in this particular position?
Well, I think during my years with the chamber orchestra, we did expand the repertoire in terms of both commissioning new works and also in terms of people's expectations of what might be heard or could be heard. For example, we did all the Beethoven symphonies, we did all the Schubert symphonies, and those are works that traditionally, meaning in the last 100 years or so, have been performed with larger orchestras. But I think we demonstrated very successfully that these works not only can be done with smaller forces, but in fact allow for a clearer texture and perhaps for better balance than a typical symphonic performance might allow.
Yeah. Do you have any special plans in terms of programming or special plans for yourself as a soloist?
Well, there are a number of interesting things that one might like to accomplish that, as you say, bear the nature of a special project. And some of my thinking lately has been in connection with Beethoven's anniversary, the next Beethoven anniversary coming up in 2027, which is sooner than some listeners may think. We do have to plan far ahead in the music world and particularly with ambitious projects. So that's something that's been occupying my time. The next season I'm coming to conduct just to conduct, quote unquote, without last season I think I conducted a program with a concerto. I conducted also a concerto, I think a Schumann Konzertstück from the piano as part of the program. And then this year, of course, I'm coming for the 50th anniversary gala of the Chamber Orchestra to play the Triple Concerto of Beethoven. So a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything is right, and of the very, very best. And especially just an overall question about your feeling about a chamber orchestra, this chamber orchestra, the growth of the chamber orchestra. Is that a trend?
I don't know. I haven't thought of that as a trend. I think there is a trend in Europe and in America toward a certain relaxation of boundaries between, for example, symphony orchestra and chamber orchestra, between, for example, in the case of instrumentalists, a solo career and chamber career.
Uh-huh.
Just the other night at Carnegie Hall, I heard my great friend Mitsuko Uchida play a vocal recital together with Dorothea Rushman. Well, a certain amount of years ago, it would have been unheard of for a major star, for a solo pianist of the caliber of Mitsuko Uchida to accompany a vocal recital. That wouldn't happen because that's something from another category. Today, those lines are blurred. I think that's very good. And Mitsuko is able to go on stage and say, why not? Why shouldn't I play a vocal recital with an artist that I believe in and performing music that we love? And that's exactly what they did.
Well, things have changed so very, very much in the performing world. And the demands are not what they used to be, and I think the audiences aren't what they used to be as well. But this whole idea of your responsibility as a maestro and then as a soloist, I have always found that, of course, is the way it started in Mozart's time. So I guess that's nothing new. But you really have to be on your toes on all levels, I think, and it is very, very demanding. And we certainly appreciate what you have done with the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. It's really quite amazing. And a pleasure to speak with you and to celebrate this anniversary. It's the 50th anniversary of the Chamber Orchestra that grew from a small ensemble to small in many, many ways, repertoire-wise, as also into something very, very demanding and certainly something to be proud of. And we thank you for all of your efforts.
Jill, much appreciated those warm words, and best regards to all your listeners and all the supporters and lovers of classical music in Philadelphia.
Thank you again, Maestro. A pleasure to speak to you. We just heard the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia performing the Philadelphia Overture, a work by Dirk Brosset, who is our next guest and current music director of the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. Today we are delighted and honored to have Maestro Dirk Brosset as our guest today. Maestro Brosset, welcome to Crossover and welcome, of course, to Philadelphia. And you've been here a while now and you are conducting the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. And I must admit, prior to even reading about you, I heard this beautiful nocturne that we played on the air. And it was written by Dirk Brosset. And I said, oh, a composer. So are you primarily a composer or primarily a conductor?
It's hard to say. I think composition is closer to my heart than conducting, although I love conducting. But the difference is when you conduct, you recreate the music written by other people. And I think nothing goes above creating your own music. It's for me personally, it's the highest level of freedom, because every time you open a score, you are confronted with the artistry of someone else. And so classical musicians and conductors are supposed to recreate, to give new life to the material, the information that is written on paper, while when you write the music, you start from scratch and you invent your own creative and artistic world. So for me personally, nothing goes above the creation itself.
Well, I must say, not knowing, I just said, what a beautiful piece of music. And then I don't want to belittle the fact that it was just a conductor that wrote it, but it was really an amazing, amazing thing to find out that this is perhaps really where your heart is musically. And I know it's there. But of course, we are so lucky to have you here with the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, first of all, I loved the United States of America for many reasons. As a child, as a teenager in 1976, I was touring with a youth orchestra for the celebration tour of the bicentennial of the United States of America. And one of the first concerts we did was in Chicago. And I still remember we were taking trains and subways. And at some point, I arrived in Chicago and saw the skyscrapers and the high buildings and the busy life in the city, and I said, yeah, this is a place where one day I would like to work and to live. But that was a dream of a child, of course. Then the second time I was confronted with working in America was in 1992. I wrote the music to a film called Dance, and that film was nominated for the Academy Awards for Best Foreign Language Film.
Wonderful.
And I visited Los Angeles, and I got in touch with a lot of composers, and then, yeah, that's where actually it all started. I started playing in an orchestra when I was 19. I was a trumpet player, and I auditioned for the opera, and I got a position.
Great.
So I was playing a couple of years, 2 years literally, in the opera orchestra. Then I also played the double bass in chamber orchestras.
I was going, oh my,
yeah, but. It's
a whole different technique, though. I mean, you're playing brass and then strings, and then it's good background, that's for sure.
Exactly. And apparently I was quite a good trumpet player, although I always knew I would not continue playing the trumpet or playing the double bass. I picked up the double bass. I studied the double bass in order to know more about string instruments, because knowledge about string instruments, it's very vital in order to be in front of an orchestra. If you talk to string as a brass player, if you talk to string players, you have to know exactly what you talk about sound, about technique, about reproducing.
Well, as a composer as well, I would think.
As a composer as well. So it really helped me a lot. And when I was in my late 20s, I made the switch. I said, okay, I'm going to leave my life as a performer, and I want to focus on conducting. And I've always been composing since I was 14, 15 years old. That was an ongoing thing. But it was a big step, leaving the life of being a performer and then, yeah, spending the rest of your life in front of orchestras. It was a big career move.
In terms of the size of the orchestra now, this is the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. We've been trying to really explain to the audience the difference between, of course, a massive symphonic ensemble or a chamber orchestra, which essentially, I think, came to being to do specific works. Isn't that right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's the wrong wording, a chamber orchestra, because when using the word chamber reminds us on chamber music, and
right.
A chamber orchestra is not playing chamber music at all. So actually, the size of our orchestra is 32 musicians. It's the original size of the symphony orchestra at the times of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. That was the so-called...
Well, you answered the question, because I have wondered about that. I thought it was a repertoire you play because it was written, you know, for a smaller orchestra, because the chamber orchestra is. But that's not what it is, actually. It was the size of an orchestra in that period.
Exactly. That was the size of the orchestra. And then bit by bit, the composer started writing for more and more instruments, even during Beethoven's life. In the Fifth Symphony, he's already adding five extra musicians, the piccolo, the double bassoon, the three trombones, and later composers just extended the size of the orchestra. And the more the wind players that joined the orchestra, the more string players we needed. And we ended up with
a very large,
if we would believe Mahler, we need thousand musicians.
Say, of course. So why is it the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia?
Well, I think there is the Philadelphia Orchestra, of course, that they play the big repertoire, and I think we are known for very intimate experiences. We perform in the Perelman Theater, where you can literally be in contact with the musicians. You can hear them breathe. You can smell their skin. The music is very transparent. It's like really you're inside the orchestra.
Well, you really hit the nail on the head, because I heard you do a concerto premiere. It was the cello concerto. That was the first thing of Jonathan Leshnow. And I was sitting in the second row. I never sit that way. But it was like being in the orchestra. It was very, very interesting. I the whole experience of it was rather interesting. Quite the contrary, you really can't hear better. You can hear better if you're far away, because you get the whole ensemble. But it really was that, and it's exactly what mm-hmm. you're saying. And you've done some marvelous premieres. This we spoke before. We went on air that Catherine Michel did the Michel Legrand harp concerto premiere here.
Right.
Yeah, and then Jonathan Leshnow had his cello concerto also,
right.
which was a wonderful work. Yeah. And that was where I really was introduced to the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. And I said, this is really good. I mean, it's the quality of the sound and, of course, the ambiance and everything about the whole location was really an experience that I didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
So I might, I congratulate you for making the choice. And it is a choice, I guess. Are you doing any composing anymore that we can look forward to, or that you can look forward to?
way. Yes, on a personal level, I'm composing every day, receiving commissions every day. But it's a main goal for the chamber orchestra to give commissions, and I think it's very important that musicians that basically perform Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, which is our mission statement, our core business, that they only also play music by contemporary composers. Mm-hmm. Because today, if you want to survive as a musician, you really have to be all around. You have to be, you should be aware of how Baroque music could or should be performed nowadays, but also The next day, you are on a concert stage where you perform a contemporary piece of music in which you have to explore new techniques in your instrument. So it is very important also when you want to build an orchestra that you play different types of repertoire. So this is why every year and more in the future we want to program more all-round programs. For example, in next year's program we have a world premiere of a Konrad Taus piano concerto. He wrote a concerto for piano and an iPad, whatever that might be.
Yes, I actually interviewed him.
Oh, cool.
That's a young man. He's a young man and he brought that iPad in.
Right.
It's interesting that you're going to be doing that. It was fascinating. Yes.
Yeah, we're going to bring the world premiere of a new work he's writing for the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia as I speak. And this will be combined with him playing the Saint-Saëns second piano concerto, for example. But there is also another in the May program of 2016, we bring a world premiere of a work written by an Italian composer who's also the music director of the Chamber Orchestra of New York. His name is Salvatore Di Vittorio. And he wrote a piece especially for us, Venus and Adonis. So we have all types of new works. There will be the Quattro Stagioni by Vivaldi. It's a no-brainer. It's a sellout in 1 week. But yeah, it will be combined with Piazzolla's Four Seasons of Buenos Aires.
Ah, Buenos Aires, and
exactly.
My favorite composer, Astor Piazzolla,
right.
I think one of the greats.
Yeah.
And I'm even going to go to that concert.
And also what is new that we have a collaboration with the composers of the Curtis Institute of Music. So we will ask a couple of composers to recompose some of the music that is already on the program. For example, in November 2015, we have a all Beethoven program. And there is one Curtis composer who will take one of the themes, either from the Coriolano Overture or Piano Concerto or Second Symphony, and he will rewrite it, recompose it in a contemporary style. And this is very confronting and very interesting, I think, for the audience, for the musicians, and above all, for the composer.
Is that a contest or just an assignment?
No, it's not a contest. It's just an assignment. It's just putting old music in a new perspective.
So the chamber orchestra will function really as an outlet for new music, like our newly composed music, let's put it that way, perhaps.
Let's say this year we are celebrating our 50th anniversary. We've always played a lot of classical pieces, which we will do for the future. We have a core business. We have our donors, sponsors, clients, subscribers. We will serve them with classical music, but we also have to focus on the future. And the classical music, it's not the only music that is on the planet. There are a lot of other genres and that can be explored. And I think for me, the important thing is that the focus should always be on the orchestra and on the musicians, because they are the core of our organization.
Well, also of keeping music going and growing as
exactly.
Well.
I think we have to focus on new audiences. We live in a very volatile world. I'm not so sure about the future of symphony orchestras general in the world.
I mean,
we are focusing huge problems all over the world, America, Europe, Asia. So the interest in classical music, we have to be very careful about it. So, and this in a time where the world population is extending. But I have the impression that the interest in classical music is going down, and we have to think about it. We have to be very creative, and we have to be ahead of possible problems. And I think the key is education. I think we should educate young generations with
more contemporary,
with different genres of music, not only classical music, but educate them in a way that they can choose whatever music they want to listen to. And but if we don't bring them into contact with classical music in a later stage of their lives, probably they will always be afraid of it, because they always think classical music is for the elite, it's only for rich people, and it doesn't belong to our culture, which is absolutely nonsense. For me, there are two types of music. There's good music and bad music.
Well, that's the old saying. Yeah.
But there are no borders. I mean, there's great jazz music. There's great Indian music. There's great world music.
And
they're
bringing it in. The world music is really fantastic. And I think it's being incorporated into the newer works. Well, Maestro, I could talk to you forever. And we are so thrilled that you're here. And again, I must reiterate, the works that I've heard that you have composed are off the top. I didn't know who wrote it. I said, what a gorgeous piece of music. And I said, Dirk Brosset, my God.
Thank you so much, Maestro.
So keep writing and keep conducting and keep letting us know and expanding the chamber orchestra, not in size as much as, I guess, the world of the chamber music.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure to have you here.